Well, this week was a huge moment in our family because this week Becky turned 17. She got her driver's license. Now, I mean, isn't that cool? It's big moments like that. I remember back when I did that. But have you ever looked back at some of those big moments in your life? You know, those are those moments that are unforgettable, right? Well, this morning I want to tell you, share with you one of the biggest moments in my life. And it goes back to actually when I first got started in ministry. It was back in the year 1991. I had a mullet and MC Hammer pants and just, you know, grooving it all the time. But no, not really. But I was about a year after I graduated college and I was living at home. I had just started a job as a graphic designer. I was about to buy my first and only that I wish I knew that then, my first and only new car that I ever owned and things like that. So life was going pretty good. But there was something else going on in my life. And it had started about a year before. During my senior year of college, I started really growing with God. And I had started meeting with some other students and started reading God's word. And in there, I was learning and realizing that I'm complete in Jesus Christ alone. What that means in everyday life. And I was excited because now I was out of college and I really wanted to follow Jesus in every part of my life. So I was really seeking to do that. But since I was home and I'd been away for so long, I hadn't found a church yet to go to or anything like that. My mom noticed that. And one day she came up to me and goes, "Hey, I know you're not going to church, but I know of a church and they actually have a really big singles group." And I'm like, I don't know about that, but you know, and she goes, no, they have all these different activities. And one of the activities they have right down the street every week is they get together and play volleyball. And I said, I like volleyball. I said, I think I'll give it a shot. So I started going to this group. And over the next few months, as I started getting into this volleyball group, and then I began going to church there on Sundays and getting to know the pastor, It was going pretty well, and I was a regular there. And then one week, I was at church, and Pastor Bob, the single adult pastor, came up to me and said, "Hey, I'm not going to be able to be there Thursday night for volleyball." I said, "Okay, I can open and close and make sure everything's taken care of." And he goes, "Well, also, I need you to do the Bible study that night." And I'm like, no way. I'd never led any Bible study in my entire life. He goes, "That's only about 5-10 minutes. Don't worry about it. You'll do fine." I'm like, all right, just this one time. And I did it, and I poured myself into it, and I made it. Somehow I survived. And I was like, phew. Anyway, the next Sunday at church, I'm at church, and Bob says, "I heard you did a good job." I said, "Yeah." He goes, "I hate to do this, but I'm not going to be there again this week. Do you think you could do it again this week?" I'm like, "Oh, you're pushing it." I said, "Okay." Well, after 5 straight weeks of that, something dawned on me that, oh, I guess now I'm the leader of this group. Because he never really came back to that group. And I didn't know at the time. It was his way of kind of nudging me into ministry because he saw God using me. But anyway, over about the next 6-7 months, I was leading this, and some of the other groups in the church, singles groups in the church, really started growing. And I remember Pastor Bob came up to me and goes, "Hey, guess what? Next fall, we're going to do a singles retreat." I said, "Oh, that sounds all right, you know." And he goes, no, this is going to be huge. In fact, we're going to open it to singles throughout the entire region. We're going to put it on the radio and all kinds of things. And it's going to be big. I'm like, wow, that sounds awesome. And he says, "Well, I have something else, too. I wonder if you can be one of the featured speakers." I'm like, no way am I doing. So anyway, he talked me into it again. But I ended up being one of the featured speakers of this retreat. And it went on. And we had a couple hundred single adults there, and it was really huge and really successful. And you say, "Man, that is a big moment, isn't it?" Well, that's not the big moment. There's more. I haven't gotten to the big moment yet, because it was on this retreat that I met my future wife. She had come with a friend, and we sit around a table, and we met. And at the time, I didn't really think anything of it. It was just another person I met, you know. And I was caught up in all the other big things that were happening. But then over the next several months, she came out to the volleyball group, got involved, and we became good friends. And then eventually we realized, man, God brought us together. So now as I look back on that, 26 years later since we met, I remember that. 20? Thank you. I'm getting chicken wings for dinner tonight, man. Anyway. 26 years later, I look back on that, and I'm just like, you know, all the big things that were happening, I don't remember the people on the retreat. I don't remember where, I don't remember where the retreat was even, or even what I don't remember exactly what I talked about. All I remember about that was I got to meet Debbie. And it was a big, big moment. You know, and we have big moments like that. And speaking of big moments and big stuff, you know, we've been going through the Old Testament book of Genesis for the past several series, I guess, as we've been going through it. And we've seen some big stuff, some big moments in Genesis, haven't we? I mean, Genesis is an important book of the Bible. There's been big events in the book of Genesis, right? Huge. Creation. It's pretty big, right? The fall of man. The flood. It's pretty big. Pretty big stuff. We also have seen some big figures, some big people in Genesis. People like Adam and Eve and Noah. And then we've talked about these fathers of faith, this Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. You know, they're even part of prayers that the Jews still say today. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Huge figures. But who we're going to start to look at today is even bigger in Genesis. And you say, how can that be bigger? It is. Because today we begin looking at the life of Joseph. And you're like, Joseph? How's he so big? Well, you know, many people have said of Joseph that he's one of the most important figures in all of the Old Testament leading up to Christ. In fact, people say that Joseph was a type or a foreshadowing of Jesus. So the story of Joseph is very important. In fact, the story of Joseph, you know, in the book of Genesis, it takes up 26% of the book of Genesis. With all the big things that happened in Genesis, 13 out of the 50 chapters of Genesis are about Joseph. That's more space that's given to creation or the fall or the flood combined. It's more space and attention given to Joseph than even Abraham. So in looking at just that, we have to say, well, Joseph must be pretty important. And he is, because his story is one that everyone who follows Jesus, we can relate to. And everybody who's living life, because he goes through the whole gamut of experiences and emotions in his life as he's following God. In fact, he's a man that led a life of incredible purpose as God worked in and through him. And isn't that what we talk about for ourselves? Now, the story of Joseph, it begins in Genesis chapter 37. So you can turn there. At this point, Joseph, we pick up with Joseph. He's 17 years old. However, before we jump in and read some of chapter 37 here, it helps give a fuller picture of where this is and why this is so significant when we understand how Joseph got here. And in understanding how Joseph got here, we have to go all the way back to his great-grandfather, Abraham. Okay, Abraham. Abraham was called by God to follow him. God says, I want you to follow me to a land I'm going to give to you. And I'm going to bless you. In fact, I'm going to make you into a great nation. And through you and your descendants are all nations of the earth going to be blessed. In fact, one of Abraham's descendants through his line comes Jesus, who changes the world. And this promise was given to Abraham, who followed in faith. And then it was passed on to his son, Isaac, who then passed it on to his son, Jacob. And these three men who were following God's promise were very significant. But there's a couple of things about them. Even though they were growing in their faithfulness to God, they still were like normal people. In fact, they had times where they doubted God and when they did boneheaded things, where they had failures in their life of not trusting God. And no more of these three than Jacob. Jacob was probably the one who had the most. In fact, Jacob, when he was born second, so he wasn't in line for the promise. But God had told his mom, even before he was born, that Jacob would be the one who carries on this promise through Abraham. And even though Jacob knew about this, instead of trusting God, he decided to take matters into his own hands. So he steals the birthright from his older brother Esau by lying to his father or deceiving his father. And because of all this, his brother wants to kill him. He's led everybody down. He has to flee. And he has to leave this land of promise and go to this land called Haran, where his uncle lives. So he goes up to Haran, and while he's there, he meets his uncle, but then he meets one of his uncle's daughters, Rachel, and he falls in love. He says, I want to marry this woman. He says, you got to work 7 years for me to marry her. Fine. He works 7 years, and the wedding day comes, and here Laban tricks Jacob, and he doesn't marry Rachel. He marries Rachel's older sister, who's not nearly as attractive or as appealing. Her name's Leah, and Jacob doesn't love her. He loves Rachel. So Laban says, well, you can marry Rachel now, but you have to promise to work for me another 7 years. Now he has two wives. One he doesn't love and one he loves. Not great. But yet, through all this, God is faithful because God starts giving him descendants. But they're through Leah, not Rachel. Rachel is barren. She can't have kids. But Leah starts to have children. She has four boys. And after each of these boys that she has, she starts thinking, maybe if when I have this child, my husband is going to love me. Finally love me and appreciate me. That doesn't happen. Jacob still loves Rachel. So because of this, Leah's pretty angry. And she's jealous of Rachel and this love that she has. At the same time, Rachel sees her sister having all these kids. And she says, why can't I have kids? So she gets angry at this. And she's also jealous of her sister. So she goes to Jacob and says, listen, buddy, you better give me a son. You're barren. Okay, then marry my servant. Bilhah was her name. You're going to marry my servant, and you're going to have kids through her, and then they'll become my kids. So he does, and she has two sons. Then Leah, who now stopped having kids, and she couldn't have kids anymore, she gets jealous of this and says, oh, now this is creeping in on me. So she goes to Jacob and says, you're going to marry my servant then. Zilpah, sounded like a soap opera, isn't it? So Jacob does, and has two kids through Zilpah. Well, then God allows Leah to have more kids, and she has two more sons. And all the while, Rachel's sitting there saying, what about me? So now at this point, Jacob has 10 sons. But now God finally gives him a son through Rachel. And Rachel gives birth to a boy. They name him Joseph. Okay, so now you're seeing where we get Joseph from. And even though Joseph is the 11th son in the line of Jacob, he's the son of the wife that Jacob loves, the one that he wanted. So because of that, Jacob is number one son. He is the favorite son of Jacob. Anyway, some years go by, and God finally calls Jacob to go back to the land of promise, and God even led some reconciliation between Jacob and Esau. And Jacob comes back into the land of promise, but instead of going to see his father right away, he settles. And then he finally says, all right, let's go down to the southern part of the land where my father is. On their way down there, Rachel's pregnant again, and she gives birth to another son named Benjamin. But while she's giving birth to Benjamin, she dies. So now Jacob is without the love of his life, and what's left is this dysfunctional mess of a family. He's got three wives, 12 boys. The three wives are all jealous of each other and don't like each other and backbiting each other. And they're passing this on to the sons. So now there's all this turmoil with the sons because they're sitting there, well, you don't love my mom and all of this. So this is what we kind of walk into or step into here in chapter 37 of Genesis with Jacob living in this land. He's got these 12 sons and the 11th one and his most favorite one is named Joseph. So let's pick up and we'll kind of see what happens. Let's begin midway through verse 2. Okay. It says, Joseph, being 17 years old, he was pasturing the flock with his brothers. Okay, remember, Jacob was a great shepherd, and he's passing this on to his kids. So he's out pasturing the flock with his brothers. He was a boy with the sons of Bilhah and Zilpah, his father's wives. And Joseph brought a bad report of them to their father. So Joseph ends up being a tattletale. He goes back home and says, they're not working right. They're not working as hard as whatever he's saying. He's saying they're doing something that's not right. And he tells them. So then they get in trouble, and they find out about this. So he brings the baby before. And then it says, now Israel, or this was God's name that he gave to Jacob, Israel. So when you see Israel, you think Jacob. So now Israel loved Joseph more than any other of his sons because he was a son of his old age and he was a son of Rachel. And he made him a robe of many colors. Remember Joseph, the coat of many colors. And he made him this coat that just stood out among all the others. But when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than all his brothers, they hated him, and they could not speak peacefully to him. So imagine that. Now, Joseph, he had a dream. And when he told it to his brothers, they hated him even more. Because here's what his dream was. It says, hear this dream that I have dreamed. Behold, we were binding sheaves in the field, or making stacks of wheat. So we were binding sheaves in the field, and behold, my sheaf arose and stood upright. And behold, your sheaves gathered round it and bowed down to my sheaf. His brother said to him, are you indeed to reign over us? Or are you indeed to rule over us? Is that what you're saying? So they hated him even more for his dreams and for his words. Then he dreamed another dream and told it to his brothers. He says, hey, I had another dream. Let me tell you what that was about. Behold, dreamed another dream. Behold, the sun and the moon and 11 stars were bowing down to me. But when he told it to his father, so the brothers probably said, you got to tell this to your dad too. So when he told it to his father and to his brothers, his father rebuked him and said to him, what is this dream that you've dreamed? Shall I and your mother and your brothers indeed come to bow ourselves to the ground before you? And his brothers were jealous of him and his father, but his father kept this saying in his mind. And we're going to stop right there. I mean, this is quite a mess, isn't it? It's quite a mess. And you're saying, how is Joseph this great? We'll get to it. But it's a mess. You have this spoiled kid, right? One of the youngest. I'm the youngest, so I know about that. You know, you kind of stick that and say, look what I have. So that's what Joseph is, right? You have misunderstood dreams, intense hatred, and you have jealousy from all angles, right? It sure doesn't seem like a great start to something big, does it? Yet, this morning, as we have this introduction to Joseph, what we find as we'll look at his entire life, when we find out about him, you know what it can give us? It can give us encouragement and insight as we follow God ourselves today and seek to live lives of purpose right where we are. So it's important that we pick it up. In fact, what I want to do this morning is as kind of an introduction, is highlight two truths that we see in Joseph's life that are also true for us as we follow God and as God works his purpose in our lives. And the first truth is present right here at the beginning of the story. And it's this. Joseph has no idea. At this point in the story, he doesn't have a clue what's in store for him. What's going to happen to him coming up? Or how his life is going to turn out? Now, for us, we have scripture, so we can read through the next, you know, 13 chapters or so and say, oh, now I see what happened to Joseph. Or maybe we've learned the story of Joseph. Have you ever heard of Joseph? Kind of know a little bit about it. And we say, well, wait a minute. Oh, I know how it turns out. Why would that upset him? Well, think about it. He doesn't know. And as Joseph lived his life out, he has no idea what's going to happen. In fact, in order to get the most out of this series on Joseph, here's what I need you to do. Put yourself in Joseph's shoes. Pretend I don't know what's going to happen. I'm going to put myself in Joseph, so I want to feel what it feels like for him. And place yourselves in his shoes, not knowing. Now, if you think you can do this, if you've heard Joseph's story and say, yeah, I think I can do this, then keep listening for the next couple minutes. But if you don't think you can do this, or you don't know the story of Joseph, and you say, well, now if I learn the story of Joseph, I don't know if I can do that, then what you do, cover your ears for the next couple minutes because I'm going to do a spoiler alert. Because I just want to give you a little overview of Joseph's life. Because you couldn't script out what's going to happen in his life. There's no way. So here's what happens in life. Cover your ears if you don't want to hear. But here's what happens after this point. Again, his brothers are jealous and they want to kill him. Now they end up not killing him. Instead, they betray him. And they sell him off to slave traders to get rid of him. And then they pretend he's dead. Joseph, he didn't know that. And you know what else? He didn't know he'd end up in Egypt, all the way down in Egypt, which is a place that hated his people. He didn't know he'd end up as a servant in the home of one of Pharaoh's chief rulers, the head of his guards. And he didn't know that while he was working there, he would get accused of a crime he never committed and thrown in prison. Forgotten about. But he also didn't know that while he was in prison, he was going to find favor there and he was going to interpret dreams of people while they were there who would then get out. But he also didn't know that even when these guys got out, they would forget all about him. Leave him there to die. But he didn't know that one day he would be asked to interpret one of Pharaoh's dreams. And he didn't know that as he interpreted that dream, Pharaoh would promote him, not only get him out of jail, but would promote him to second command over the entire nation of Egypt. And he didn't know that he would lead Egypt's efforts to prepare for a worldwide famine that was coming. And he didn't know that one day his own brothers would come to Egypt looking for food because they're affected by that same famine. And he didn't know that he would be the one that they would come to, and he would be the one who would give them this food, making a way for God's promise to continue. Joseph, 17-year-old guy, he doesn't know. And you know what? When it comes to God working his purpose out in our lives today, we don't know. We have no idea how God will unfold our story. Do you know that? We may think we know. We may say, well, this is how it should be. I want to write. We have no idea what God's going to do in our life. We don't know how God's going to lead and guide us, how he's going to use successes in our lives or failures in our lives, how he's going to use events and circumstances to enable us to impact our world. We don't know. But even though we don't know, and because we don't know how God is going to work, then even through our failures and even through the valleys of our lives and through the successes in our lives, we can't quit. We can't give up. We can't lose heart in following God from the peaks and the valleys that we go through in life because we don't know what God is doing or what he will do. We don't know how God may use a loss that we experience in our life to restore someone else's faith. We don't know how a sickness or a trial that we have to go through may encourage someone who feels that they're all alone. Or how a great victory we may go through may draw others to see God in us and give him glory. We don't know. We don't know how God may be using our simple faithfulness at work to encourage someone that thinks, well, I'm just wasting my time here. We don't know how God may use a kind word of encouragement we say to someone at school to change their life. We just don't know. But God does. And that means we keep faithful through anything. And this is why at the end of Joseph's story, when it's all brought together again and this all happens and his brothers come to him And they say, after everything we did to him, I mean, we ruined his life. And after all this, he's certainly going to get revenge at us. And his wife Joseph, right at the end of Genesis in chapter 50, says this to his brothers. As for you, you meant evil against me. But God meant it for good. To bring about that many people should be kept alive as they are today. Hey, you didn't know this was going to happen. Neither did I. But God did. We don't know, just as Joseph didn't know. And this is huge, isn't it? I mean, it's a game changer in how we live. It's a game-changing truth. But do you want to know something? There's even something bigger at play here in the life of Joseph that can encourage us. You see, through all of Joseph's faithfulness, through his highs and his lows, through his failures, and then his ultimate success, do you know what? Joseph isn't the focus of his story. God is. You see, the life of Joseph is about God's faithfulness more than anything else. It's about God making a way where there is no way, where there seems to be no way. God makes a way. In fact, this truth can transform the way we follow God. It can keep us going. It can encourage us as we follow him right where we are. Because God, just as God was the focus of Joseph's life, God is the hero of our story. Do you know that? God is the hero of your story as he works in and through you. Our lives aren't about us being strong or together or what we can achieve. That's not the measure of our lives. Our lives are about Jesus being seen in us. He's the focus, and he's the one that should be exalted. It's why Paul, when he was dealing with one of his struggles, and he says, why won't this struggle ever leave me? And he cries out to God. And he says in 2 Corinthians, he says, but God said to me, my grace is sufficient for you, for my power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly of my weakness, so that the power of Christ may rest upon me. You know what he's saying? So Jesus can be seen in me. For the sake of Christ, then, I'm content with my weakness, insults, hardships, persecution, and calamities, no matter what I go through. For when I'm weak, then I'm strong. Why? Because Jesus is then the focus. Jesus is the focus of our lives as we follow God. No matter what we go through, through our faithfulness, he's going to be seen and celebrated. In fact, it's through Jesus and Jesus alone that we even come to him, that we come into relationship with him, that we experience salvation. It isn't about our goodness. It isn't about our ability. It's not about our work. It's about Jesus, right? Who came and he lived the perfect life we could never live. And then he pays the penalty of our sin, which is death, when he dies on the cross for us. And then he earns that new life for us with God now and forever when he rises from the dead. It's about him. He's the hero. We talk about the overview of the Bible. You know what the overview of the Bible is? God is the hero. And he's the hero of our lives. The hero of our story. So this morning, as we jump into this incredible journey of Joseph over the next several weeks, buckle up. Because it's going to be a wild ride. You're going to see how this pans out. It's amazing. For in Joseph, you know what we find? We find the model of God's faithfulness as he uses one person's life to make an incredible impact. It's an impact that God seeks to make through each of us as we live life on purpose. Now you got to come next week as we continue his story. But let's pray.